This is Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith.
We hear about big climate tipping points like melting ice at the poles or shifts in ocean currents. Parts of the Amazon rainforest may already be shifting towards grasslands. But what if these tipping points interact, feeding on one another? The title of a recent paper from European scientists tells all. Interacting tipping elements increase risk of climate domino effects under global warming. The lead author is postdoctoral researcher Nico Wunderling. He works with the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research, the Stockholm Resilience Center, and Princeton University. From Berlin, Nico Wunderling, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Yeah, thank you very much, Alex. I'm happy to be here.
Scientists like the famous Hans Schellenhuber identified three clusters of switchable states in nature and the critical temperatures that could tip them. It makes a good starting platform for your work, I think. Nico, what are those tipping elements and the expected threshold temperatures they described?
Yeah, first of all, tipping elements are subsystems in the Earth that are especially vulnerable due to, for instance, global warming. And an example of that are subsystems like the Greenland ice sheet, which could either exist in a ice-covered state or without an ice cover. And the research that you have been mentioning is a research from 2016 where Schellenhuber, Ricarda Winkelmann, and Stefan Ramsdorf have done a literature review summarizing the critical temperatures with respect to global warming of a whole set of tipping elements. And what they found is that there are basically three different clusters where the first cluster can already tip at temperatures around the Paris regime or a bit higher. And parts of these cluster are the Western Arctic ice sheet, Greenland ice sheet, or Alpine glaciers. Then there is a second cluster that can, according to that literature review, tip at around 3 to 4 degrees or a bit higher. And parts of that are the Amazon rainforest, the thermohaline circulation, or AMOC, and something like the El Niño Southern Oscillation. And lastly, there's a third cluster of tipping elements that is less constrained by literature, and that might still be alive at around 4 degrees above pre-industrial and can only tip at around 4 to 5 or even higher temperatures.
For this research, your team picks four major systems, Greenland and West Antarctic ice melt, the Amazon rainforest, and something called the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, more popularly known as AMOC. In North America, they call it the Gulf Stream. Why those ones, Nico?
Of course, that's a subset of all possible tipping elements, but for these four tipping elements, there has been a interaction structure that has been found by earlier literature. And that's why we're focusing on these four tipping elements. However, we would like in the future, it would be very helpful to have a larger subset of interacting tipping elements. However, when we've done that research, that has not been known in its full structure.
Well, when you add more, it becomes more and more complicated. Already you had to use like something like 11 million samples and 37 or more different model setups. It was very complicated. So,
yeah, it indeed becomes a bit more difficult. But with this research, we're using a quite conceptual model that tries to simplify the dynamics of these tipping elements to their most basic form, so to say. And with that, it would be possible, in my view, to add another 4 or 5. And when we designed that research, that was also one of the motivations why we did that, since the simplicity of the model allows for an easy add-up of further tipping elements. But, of course, you would need to know the interaction structure, and that's the current problem.
So how do we know systems like Greenland or Antarctic ice have two different states that can last for long, stable periods?
And there are basically two different strands of research that have given us a glimpse on that. So, for instance, for the Greenland ice sheet, there is evidence from paleo records and from individual, more complex models. So, for instance, in paleo times, some 10,000 to 100,000 years ago, there have been times when the Greenland ice sheet has been partially or nearly completely been disintegrated or melted down. during some of the earlier interglacials, for instance, that has been hypothesized. So that's something that we know from this paleo data. And there has been also models that are physics-based, that are where there are research groups that have developed more complex models of the Greenland ice sheet, and they have performed global warming scenarios and found a distinct decrease of the Greenland ice sheet if a certain temperature is surpassed in global warming. And the same is true for the Western Arctic ice sheet.
Can we say Earth has already reached the critical temperature to tip these polar ice worlds towards unstoppable retreat?
Yeah, in my view, we're around 1 to 1.1 degrees of global warming above the pre-industrial era. And that means that we're indeed in something like a risk zone, right? So, for instance, the Greenland ice sheet has a critical temperature of around 0.8 to 3.2 degrees of global warming. So meaning that we have now surpassed 1 up to 1.1 degrees of global warming means that it would be possible, but in the zone of uncertainty, that this ice sheet could start to tip. Now, however, if the Greenland ice sheet starts melting, then that would, for a full disintegration, that would take centuries to millennia. But we're surely now in the zone of risk.
If the North Atlantic currents are diverted further south, Europe gets colder, but ice melt on Greenland may also slow up. So does it matter which tipping element goes first?
Yeah, that would indeed matter. So maybe to give the example between the Greenland ice sheet and the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, the AMOC, there are two important interaction mechanisms. So for instance, if the Greenland ice sheet would start melt, then there would be increased freshwater, less salty water influx into the North Atlantic. And that indeed might weaken the AMOC, while when the AMOC becomes weaker, as you said, there would be a reduction of warming over the Northern Hemisphere and potentially also over Greenland, which might then hold the warming. But from saying that, you can already recognize that the starting point in such a tipping cascade, such a potential tipping cascade, would be the Greenland ice sheet, since this one has a lower temperature threshold and would then be the reason of weakening the AMOC. But potentially, and that's what we cannot finally resolve, is the possibility that the Greenland ice sheet starts melting and is then halted by a weakening AMOC. However, if one of these tipping elements would indeed transgress their threshold and disintegrate, then that would have significant consequences.
Why do you call melting of the Greenland ice sheet a dominant initiator of cascades, and not just of AMOC, but possibly of other tipping elements far away in the world?
Yeah, in this subset of four tipping elements that we have here, Greenland, AMOC, Amazon rainforest, and Western Arctica, we found that when we find tipping cascades in our global warming scenarios, that most of them have been started by the Greenland ice sheet, meaning that in our timelines that we look at, the Greenland ice sheet seems to be or is the first one to melt, and from that further upstream tipping elements are also starting to disintegrate or to weaken. So, for instance, the Western Arctic ice sheet or the AMOC. And that's why we can call the Greenland ice sheet an initiator of tipping cascades.
The only living system included in this study is the Amazon rainforest. Please tell us what new state could be reached there.
Yeah, potentially due to climate change, but also due to deforestation, it could happen that the new state instead of the rainforest state that we have now would be something like a savanna or a less forested state. And that can actually happen under, as I said, due to climate change and due to increased droughts, but also due to human-induced deforestation.
What is a tipping cascade, and what could it mean for the human economy, Nico?
A tipping cascade, as we understand it here, would be if one tipping element starts to tip, that draws and pulls along another tipping element. So to stay with the example of the Amazon rainforest, if, for instance, the AMOC starts tipping and becomes weaker, then it can happen that the intertropical convergence zone does shift, and with that, there are more frequent droughts in the Amazon rainforest, and that could then change the precipitation patterns and lead to a dieback of parts or even the entire Amazon rainforest. So a tipping cascade in that sense means that if one tipping element tips, another one is pulled along.
To be clear for our listeners, when a system tips, that is the beginning, not the end. For example, how long could it take for Greenland to reach that new stable state it is capable of?
Yeah, that's indeed a very important point to make here. If, for instance, the Greenland ice sheet starts tipping or starts melting, then it can take centuries to millennia until the Greenland ice sheet would be disintegrated. However, and that's also important to note, is once the Greenland ice sheet has started to tip, it is not sufficient to just pull the forcing, the global warming, back to its original state, but you need to go further back since these tipping elements, they do have an hysteresis. And hysteresis means that once you have started a tipping point, it becomes more difficult to reverse it.
Yes, I noticed that your models do not include the possibility of these tipped systems going back to what they were, that there's no falling back in them.
Yeah, indeed. And this can be justified, for instance, for the Greenland ice sheet, because you can have this hysteresis effect, which means that, yeah, for instance, if you transgress the temperature threshold of Greenland, let's say you're at around 3 degrees above pre-industrial, then start tipping, and then reverse the temperature, if you can do that, to, let's say, 2 degrees of pre-industrial. But if you are too slow in doing that, then this is not sufficient to save the Greenland ice sheet, since it has already started to disintegrate.
In an earlier 2009 study, Kragler et al. Employed your four tipping elements, plus a fifth, the Pacific Ocean system known as ENSO. We on the ground experience ENSO as either the cooling La Nina happening this winter, or heat-releasing El Nino when many world record temperatures are set. Why was ENSO not included in your new study, or was it?
ENSO is a different kind of a tipping element. So while for the Greenland ice sheet, the AMOC, the Amazon rainforest, and the Western Arctic ice sheet, it can be justified to use this bifurcation diagram, this hysteresis form of a tipping element, for the El Nino southern oscillation for ENSO, this is not the case. This is a different kind of tipping element. In more technical terms, we would call that a Hopf bifurcation. It's not too important what that means, but in mathematical details, but simply spoken, it's a different kind of tipping element. And therefore, we have included the ENSO only in our supplementary material to show that our main results remain stable even if we add the ENSO.
I noticed that you mentioned something that I've been wondering about. Is it possible with global warming that the hot El Nino will come more often or even become a permanent fixture in the Pacific?
Yeah, that's the hypothesis that earlier research has made, that under global warming, the ENSO can indeed become more frequent and in the worst case become the permanent new state. And that would have very severe consequences, for instance, for the Amazon rainforest. Since then there would be less rainfall, less precipitation, and again, the rainforest might then fall into a different, less forested state, such as a savanna state.
Could the ENSO oscillation going into an extreme state throw off the results of your study?
Well, it can do that. If you take the same bifurcation diagram as for the other tipping elements, then we found that indeed for instance, the AMOC can trigger a persistent ENSO state, but only when we have higher temperatures than, for instance, for the Greenland ice sheet or the Western Arctic ice sheet. So that can happen in our model, at around 3 to 4 degrees above pre-industrial.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, talking with Dr. Nico Wunderling in Germany. He led the paper Interacting Tipping Elements Increase Risk of Climate Domino Effects Under Global Warming. It was published in the EU's journal Earth System Dynamics. Nico, talk to us about the relationships between tipping elements in the Greenland ice sheet and the West Antarctic ice sheet. How could what happens at one pole destabilize the other one?
So if we imagine that, for instance, the Greenland ice sheet would start to disintegrate and melt, then we would have, over a long time, of course, have a sea level rise of 7 meters, at least 7 meters, when the Greenland ice sheet would completely melt down. And that could destabilize some of the glaciers in Western Arctica, since they are marine-based and are then less stable if the sea level would increase significantly. And that can lead to a destabilizing effect from the Greenland ice sheet directly to the Western Arctic ice sheet via sea level rise. But another interaction over the AMOC would be that the Greenland ice sheet increases its freshwater influx to AMOC, and then if the AMOC would weaken, the Southern Ocean could accumulate some heat there. And that could also lead via the ocean to a disintegration of the Western Arctic ice sheet.
So heat that doesn't go north due to a change in AMOC might flow further south of the equator. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, or could just be held there.
Johannes Lohmann and many others say a faster rate of warming can bring tipping points into action sooner in time. Now, I know you didn't predict when all this was going to happen in this paper. That wasn't the purpose of it. But how did you handle uncertainties due to the speed of climate change?
Yeah, that's indeed a difficult question. And for that research, we kind of circumvent that. But we're tackling that question in a future research. What we did here is we hypothesized that global warming will stabilize at different levels of global warming. And what we took from that is we took the entire range from pre-industrial levels of global warming, so no warming, up to 8 degrees of global warming. And 8 degrees would be if we would follow a high emission scenario until 2500, so the SSP 585. And for all these scenarios, we evaluated whether there are tipping events, tipping cascades, or whether there are not. And then we evaluated whether these, for instance, the Greenland ice sheet would tip over a long time. So we're indeed not predicting when something will tip, but we would frame that more something like a risk assessment. So if we're, say, if we're having a global warming of 2 degrees, then we can assess the risk of the Greenland ice sheet to tip over a long period of time.
The mathematics and modeling in this paper are pretty difficult for a non-scientist to follow along, and there are a lot of uncertainties. How do we know this paper is more science than magic? How did you cross-check the results?
Mm-hmm. So one very important point here is to have a look at where the uncertainties are. And basically there are three different sources of uncertainty. The first one is the critical temperature regime, so at which temperature does the Greenland ice sheet or the Western Arctic ice sheet or the AMOC tip. The second one is how strong are the interactions. So, for instance, how strong is the interaction between Greenland and the AMOC via increased freshwater influx. And third is what is the interaction structure. So is there an interaction between a weakening AMOC and a dieback of the Amazon rainforest, and is it a positive or negative link, meaning is there then more precipitation or less precipitation? And for each of these three different sources of uncertainty, we performed a careful literature review and took, at least in our opinion, the best data that is available for now. So for instance, for the critical temperature regimes, we, as we have spoken about in the very beginning, we have taken data from the literature review by John Schellnhuber, Stefan Rahmstorf, and Ricarda Winkelmann. For the interaction strength, we have taken the expert elicitation by Kriegler et al., 2009, but this is something that should be repeated in due time. And for the interaction structure, we have also taken the same expert elicitation. But you're right, there are a lot of uncertainties, and what we do then is we are simulating many, many millions of ensemble members of different starting conditions to run all different possibilities of how these uncertainties could play out. And then, in the end, we come to the results that we've published in this paper and also give the appropriate uncertainty with it.
And do you feel that these results are actually conservative?
In some way, I would feel that they are conservative, since we have taken large uncertainties here. And we have also taken into account a whole set of different global warming scenarios. So, for instance, we've taken the global warming scenarios from 0 degrees up to 8 degrees above pre-industrial.
So please tell me if I understood your results properly. This new science suggests interactions between tipping elements enable critical thresholds at lower temperatures than if each system was considered individually. And that means in an interactive Earth system, which we have, tipping points could arrive sooner than expected. Is that correct?
Yes, that's one of the very important outcomes here. And in one part of this research, we have indeed investigated the effects of the interaction between the tipping elements on their critical temperature thresholds. And that means that if we have interactions, and that's what we do, then these critical temperature regimes go down, meaning that there could indeed be tipping before the normal critical threshold if these elements would be individual.
Your team talks about, quote, domino-like interactions which also foster cascading nonlinear responses. Those sound like scary consequences, but what does it mean?
It means that the nature of tipping elements is nonlinear. That's what we use as our working hypothesis and what has been found by earlier research. And due to the interactions, this nonlinear behavior of one tipping element can be translated to other ones. And therefore, if one nonlinear change happens in one tipping element, that can be, via the interaction, translated to another one. And usually, there are unfortunately adverse effects, so negative effects.
Yes, we see a lot of graphs where there's a smooth line up or a curve, but nonlinear is something that's harder for us to grasp. Is it sort of a sudden jump in, say, heat or flooding or something like that?
For the tipping elements, this nonlinear behavior would mean that until this tipping point is reached, not a lot of melt is happening, for instance, on the Greenland ice sheet. But if this tipping point is reached and surpassed in global warming, then there is a more rapid melt, even though that takes a bit of time. But then this melt is increased by internal feedbacks in a nonlinear way, and this tipping element would then melt down.
What other tipping elements would you like to add in further studies?
Well, what I would think could be quite interesting is to add something like the Arctic summer sea ice, for instance, but also the Eastern Arctic ice sheet and some of its basins could be interesting. So these are cryosphere entities that I'd like to add if I could. So for instance, on the Eastern Arctic ice sheet, there are some basins that are more vulnerable than other parts of the Eastern Arctic ice sheet, and they might already transgress their threshold at lower temperatures than the entire Eastern Arctic ice sheet. And it would be interesting, in my view, to add those basins to the study, but also, as I said, the Arctic summer sea ice. And on top of that, it could also be interesting to add, if possible, a second class of, if you wish, tipping elements, which could be something like the permafrost, which would be a feedback process instead of a real tipping element.
Yes, absolutely. We're paying a lot of attention to permafrost thaw, not just here in Canada, but in Siberia and scientists around the world. I've had several guests talking about it.
Cool, great. That'd be, in a way, interesting to know if we would start releasing methane and other greenhouse gases from the permafrost, how that would feed back to the other tipping elements. That's something I would be interested and love to study. However, unfortunately, I don't have the interactions yet, so either other data or other Earth system models could help here.
Your new paper was published June 3rd, 2021. Is that in time for it to be absorbed by world politicians and the experts attending the COP26 climate conference in Scotland in November? What should they, and what should all of us, learn about the way a rapidly warming planet really works?
So what I would think is that it is really important to start acting now, since, as I said in the beginning, we're now in a zone of risk of starting to trigger some of these dangerous tipping elements. If they would be triggered, it would take a while for the consequences to play out, but still, if they're triggered, then it's way more difficult to get back. And that is something that should indeed be started in this decade or in the next couple of years, optimally even in COP26.
It's relatively easy for me to talk about this in terms of science, but I have to tell you, this summer we had terrible wildfires. We feared for our own home. We had a great heat dome. I watched those awful floods in Germany and Belgium this summer. And so the weather is deteriorating around the world. And I know weather is not climate, but what I'm leading to here is, how do you take this work in personally, Nico Wunderling?
Yeah, indeed, there are two different factors here that might play out, and one of which that have we just talked about, these are the tipping elements, and the other ones are extreme events such as heat waves over Canada, or extreme flooding events such as in Germany or Belgium. And yeah, in my view, this again makes clear that climate change is happening now, and that it's time for action.
I guess, yes. The difference between extreme weather and tipping points is that tipping points implicate us in how committed the climate is towards this shift and really, therefore, how much we should avoid them. We want to stay below those tipping points if we can. And Schellenhuber and others have given us some targets and some points to stay below. It's up to us to see whether we can do it.
Indeed. That's something that the current generation actually has to determine whether we will be able to do that or whether we will remain in that zone of uncertainty or even surpass it.
From the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research, or PIC, and Humboldt University in Berlin, we have been talking with the lead author and postdoc researcher, Nico Wunderling. Find links to all the science we talked about, including this critical open access paper. You can read it in my show blog, published Wednesdays at ecoshock.org. Nico, thank you for helping us understand these possible futures.
Yeah, thank you very much, Alex. Great talking to you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.